Greetings. Greetings once again. It is the Weekly Worldview. That's right. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Coming to you from the Weekly Worldview studios, exclusive. Well, they're not exclusive, actually. Do the Weekly Worldview from here. Also do Real Science Radio from here. Check out our latest Real Science Radio. I need to do a better job of promoting myself. I'm not much into self-promotion. I've always been of the opinion that if you were meant to be successful, it would just happen naturally, and you wouldn't have to put on a massive sales job. And it turns out I'm probably wrong about that. It could be that I just had a subliminal, subconscious aversion to being extremely successful because that would probably be problematic for a guy like me. It's better for me to end up just kind of fair to middling, you know, not like Rand Paul, who's become probably more successful than he should have been. It would have been better for Rand Paul to remain pulling teeth or running scans of people's jaws and teeth back there in Kentucky rather than having ended up in Washington, D.C. Because I'm certain at one point Rand Paul had a lot of common sense. After all, he made it through medical school. I mean, dental school, which, does that count as medical school? I think that counts as medical school. Seems like it would be pretty hard. You have to know a lot of biology and math, and you have to memorize a lot of stuff. So he's probably a smart guy, had a lot of common sense, but he has just introduced some proposed legislation that is called, quote, the End Welfare for Non-Citizens Act, unquote. So Rand Paul's been so successful, and he's been in Washington, D.C. so long, he doesn't realize that he should have stopped at End Welfare, period. Well, he could leave Act on there, I suppose, since that's how they do it up there, where they do a lot of acting, as a matter of fact, in the Senate and in the legislature in general. Rand Paul and other sensible, common sense people should understand that ending welfare should be legislated. It should be the legislative priority. Excuse me. This is why I never made it to Washington, never became a lawyer. It's because I'm not that articulate. But ending welfare should be the legislative priority, not just ending welfare for non-citizens, because that's really just an election bait point to make. That's really what this is about. Now, color me cynical, but when you add those extra words, Mr. Paul, end welfare for non-citizens, the for non-citizens part leads me to believe that this is just a political ploy for the upcoming midterm elections, so that you can run ads later on telling people he tried to end welfare for those nasty, rotten, horrible non-citizens. But those dirty Democrats and those liberals won't let him reelect Rand Paul in order to preserve and save America. They actually have an act called the Save America Act that they can't pass. I know, it's... if you can't pass an act to save America, well, we're in trouble, I think. You would think everybody wants to save America. But one side doesn't want to save America. They want to destroy America and loot it. And then the other side, they're just playing politics, which is why we're in trouble. So, Rand, next time you write legislation in order to do right, just stop at end welfare, because if you ended welfare, by definition, it would include non-citizens. Do you have to tell people this? I know that Rand never went to law school, but he did go to dental school, medical school. All right, so That's the political introduction. I want to move then from there, from Washington, D.C., to the dim old world file, where we go to Braunau am Inn in Austria. Austria, I said. That's right. Reuters reports that the building in Austria, where Hitler was born, has been reassigned and is beginning a new life, they call it. The building where Hitler was born has begun a new life. The house had been owned by a charity for people with disabilities, but Austria, we're told by Reuters, made what they call a compulsory purchase in 2017. And I read the story, and it really doesn't go into what that means, a compulsory purchase. That would indicate someone was forced to buy it. And apparently it was the government of Austria. So it seems like the Austrian government forced someone to sell it to them, which sounds like a compulsory sale, but maybe they call it a compulsory purchase to kind of take the edge off. We don't want people to think they were coming to just force them to sell us their buildings and their private property. No, this is a compulsory purchase. We are compelled to buy it. We wish we didn't have to, but we must. And then you're not supposed to ask him why we must. You just hand over your stuff. And they give you, hopefully fair market value. I don't know how all this came about. But it would seem to me that if the house where Adolf Hitler was born has actually ended up housing a charity for people with disabilities, and then assuming that the charity is legitimate, and it's not just some government scam like most charities. Did I just say that? Yeah, most charities, I'm convinced, are primarily money laundering operations and or means by which relatively lazy people fund their life and their retirement through charities. Relatively lazy, not the brightest, not the most highly motivated people, not the hardest working people, but the relatively dim-witted and lazy, they start charities so that they can always say, well, I'm doing it for charity. Oh, is that why you don't do it all that well? Okay. You would think if you were doing it for genuine charity, you would work harder and better than people in private industry who are just working for money. Because the biblical definition of charity, charity's way above like contracting for cash. Charity is something you do for the good of others in the presence of God. So people working for charity should do better than anyone, but they don't. They generally do worse because most charities are scams. But let's just say that the building where Adolf Hitler was born, the house, which is in Austria, let's say it did end up a legitimate charity for people with disabilities. That seems to me, I would leave it that way. If I were the government of Austria and I was trying to move on from the rather embarrassing history of installing Adolf Hitler and all of that, all of the unpleasantness associated with that, I would leave that alone because that seems poetic to me. Because, you know, Hitler killed all those disabled people. That's how he started with his mad killing spree. He started with the disabled. And then just slowly expanded that to include just about everybody. But instead, the Austrian government made a compulsory purchase in 2017. And since then, they have been remodeling the building. So you can tell it's a government operation. You buy a house in 2017, that's almost 10 years ago, by the way, and then you've been remodeling it since then. 10 years remodeling a house? And I saw the picture. It's not like a really big house. We would call it a townhouse or an apartment in America. But for 10 years, the Austrian government has probably spent millions and millions of, what do they use in Austria? Oh, they use the euro. They've probably spent, meaning laundered, millions, if not tens of millions of euros through this particular property. kicking it back to various NGOs, family members, misfit nephews and nieces, political donations, all the things that are done in a typical government slash mafia operation these days. And now they've remodeled the building finally, almost 10 years later, and they made the announcement this past week that the house where Adolf Hitler was born is being turned into a police station. A police station? Excuse me? It was a charity for people with disabilities, and now you've turned it into a police station because why? Because no one in Europe recognizes irony anymore? Or I don't know. How do you do that? Hitler was known as the inventor of the police state. The SS was the secret police. When you think police state, you think Adolf Hitler and the Austrian government. Am I the only one who sees this as ironic? Okay, maybe I am. I wouldn't do that. I would have left it as a charity, even if it wasn't an efficient charity. Now, speaking of all that, let's go to the famous last words file, because this is a story I didn't get to last week, but it has to do with Adolf Hitler. That's right. And it's not like I'm turning this into the History Channel where everything's about Adolf Hitler. Although that's not really true anymore. That used to be true back in the day when the History Channel first came on. In order to be successful, after about 6 p.m. Eastern, everything they played was about Hitler in some way. Because how else were you going to get World War II generation people to watch the History Channel? Because young people don't care about history, only old people trying to remember stuff. And so they just played Hitler, Hitler, Hitler. Hitler built the History Channel for at least the first 10 years, at least the 6 p.m. to 4 a.m. time slot. It was all Hitler all the time. But anyway, let's get to the story where the president, Donald Trump, and by the way, folks, I am not one to compare Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. I don't think I've ever done that. But Don, you need to check yourself, buddy. Because, well, here's what he said last week. He was in an interview last week, broadcast on the Fox News channel, which, Don, you shouldn't do that. But anyway, he did it, and so there you go. It was on Special Report, which, by the way, is on every week, which would strike me that it's not very special. How often can you call Special Report when it's on Sunday, every Sunday at the same time? You start wondering if maybe you're getting a sales pitch here. Maybe this isn't that special. Maybe Brett Baer isn't really all that special, and the reports he's bringing me aren't that special. But they call it Special Reports, so okay. But anyway, on this interview, Trump stated last week, we're going to knock out all their power plants. We're going to knock out all their bridges unless they get to the table and negotiate. That's what he said about Iran last week. And I want to say, Don, you need to check yourself. I've never compared Trump to Hitler. But, Don, that's pretty much what Hitler demanded of the British and Winston Churchill in 1940. He demanded that if they didn't come and negotiate, he would destroy all their power plants, all their bridges. He would bomb London to... And then that's what he did. And, Don, I know you've read books. I'm sure you've read even history books. You probably know who Winston Churchill is. I think you took the bust of him out of the garbage can there at the White House and you put it back up by the window or something. Surely you know who this guy is, right? Do you want to risk handing Iran their own twisted version of Winston Churchill with a turban because you foolishly vowed to bomb them into submission? Don, it doesn't work. You can't do it. The more you bomb Iran, the more you harden their resolve. It's been proven in history time and time again. Don, there needs to be a ground invasion and a coup d'etat that decisively replaces the Islamic State with our guy. And if you don't have either the stones or the brains to get that done, then Don, on this particular job, I'm sorry, but you're fired. All right, so that one, we're not going to nominate that one for greatest intro. In fact, it's quite well, wait a second. Let's hold on. Come back with it. All right. Well, I like the fact that they sped up the drums and stuff. But anyway, it's possible that Satisfaction as an intro might top that one. But that would... So anyway, but still, it worked as a bumper. That's the important thing for us. And so coming off the story on Donald Trump where I mentioned Adolf Hitler, and I apologize to anyone in my audience who's offended. You can't mention the name Adolf Hitler. I'm surprised they don't call it the H word now. Instead of saying Hitler, you have to say the H word. Did you see that the girl who called the Somali guy a nigger, that she was convicted this week, this past week of, I forget, she was convicted of disorderly conduct because a Somali guy stuck a camera in her face, and he claimed she had called him a nigger before, and then he baited her into calling him a nigger again on camera so he could create the story that we've all experienced here over the past whatever it is. So if you can be convicted in America of a crime for calling someone a nigger, then, well, anyway, we've got big problems. We've got big problems. Bigger than maybe even the fact that our legislators don't understand that we need to end welfare. So we've got a really big problem with the whole concept of freedom of speech. And by the way, I don't advocate calling anyone a nigger and using fighting words to start a fight or whatever whatever it was the judge, whatever it was the judge biased the jury with in that case. I don't advocate that. But certainly the idea that we're all at liberty to say things that offend other people is foundational to the preservation of our republic. And so for those of us who have faith in Jesus Christ, who they killed, by the way, and then all the people who followed him, they killed them too. So for those of us who preach the gospel and have faith in Jesus Christ, we don't call people niggers. We don't go to the, where was she? She was at the playground with her child. We don't take our kid to the playground and call people niggers and try to start fights. But we do understand that if our fellow citizens do not have that freedom, that's because typically we're being slaughtered at that point. Now, we're lucky to be in America where we have this latent residual reservoir of goodwill and protection that our grandparents, great-great-great kind of laid down for us with all the, you know, the liberty and justice for all and all that stuff that the country was built upon, so that we're not actually being slaughtered. But if this woman is actually convicted of using a racial slur, and that, well, I guess it's just one more milestone marker along the road on the highway to hell. That's all. I am glad that nobody shot at the president at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. That's a nice change of pace. And then I just want to, this week, Donald Trump was again, where was he being interviewed? It doesn't say. This is a Newsmax story. There doesn't need to be an interview because Newsmax receives most of its feed directly from the White House spokesman's office, the office of the White House, to whoever released. Yeah, they have a direct line. Trump said the U.S. will destroy one bridge or one power plant for every ship Iran fires on in the Strait of Hormuz. Don, that's a bad idea. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. It's just a bad idea to start blowing up all the bridges and all the power plants. It's... Tensions remained high, says Newsmax, which is fine by them because it helps them with clickbait stories. From this point forward, Donald Trump said in a Truth Social post, anytime the Islamic Republic of Iran shoots at a ship in the Strait of Hormuz, whether it be by missile, rocket, drone, or any other device or weapon. Hold on here. Is this actually Donald Trump? There's no way Donald Trump would write that way. Is there? I mean, unless this was stream of consciousness and he couldn't think of what to say next, why would he use so many extra words? By missile, by rocket, by drone, or any other device or weapon. Like, what other device or weapon? I don't know that there are any more that you can shoot. I guess a submarine or another ship, a spaceship, an aircraft. Let's see. Can we name all the possible platforms from which an object could be launched against? Catapults? Maybe. I don't know. This seems odd. It's almost as if... Either Donald Trump has become a lawyer because the swamp has just basically sucked him under. And that's what happens, you see. You go to Washington with the best of intentions. It happened to Lindsey Graham. Went to Washington in the early 90s with the best of intentions, a relatively common sense kind of guy. Wasn't looking to become a multimillionaire and build an empire. And fiefdoms and employ tens of thousands of people to be at his beck and call and to be beholden to him for their livings. He never had those intentions when he first started out. But by the end, I mean, he was just the picture of the big, fat, decadent, lazy, sloppy, stupid empire that America has become. Who is now... Now that the living representative, if he's alive, is, of course, Mitch McConnell. So, who, by the way, we had a phone call with Mitch just before airtime. He's doing great. His wife wants to say ni hao. I mean, hello. Whatever it is she says. But, yeah, we talk to Mitch at least once a week for about 20 minutes. And then we only take still photographs with Mitch because, you know, he's self-conscious about the whole aging thing. But anyway, Don, this is a bad idea with the destroying of one bridge or one power plant for every object that's flung from a catapult or whatever from this, you know, onto the Strait of Hormuz. But I am glad nobody shot at you at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Some of his jokes were funny, by the way. So that's one thing that the Republicans and Democrats all agree on that they hate Donald Trump for is that he's just wittier than all of they are. And they hate that. Yes. And I've made the point that the Republicans absolutely detest the fact that Donald Trump became the president as basically a toss-off, secondhand hobby thing that he started doing after he finished with like his entertainment and building careers. He's like, oh, yeah, president, too. Yeah. It's an easy one. Those guys are pretty dumb. If those morons can do it, come on. Okay, so they all hate him for that, which is why I'm actually encouraged that nobody shot at him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's kind of surprising, but... meanwhile, the CBS News and the New York Times and CNN all reported a similar story over the past 72 hours... Yes, believe it or not, I know. Shocking. CBS, CNN, and the New York Times, being three pillars of the fifth column, all reported on stories that the U.S. is running out of weapons. That's right. The Times quoted, CBS quoted U.S. officials who spoke on condition of anonymity given the sensitivity of the topic. Said the U.S. cannot sustain the rate at which it is expending precision munitions against Iran. Then the New York Times, that was Thursday or Friday. Then on Saturday, they cited multiple administration officials with concerns over dwindling Patriot interceptor inventories. Uh-huh. And then who was it? This CNN... Then quote, no, this is the Times again. The Times quotes a chairman of the Joint Chiefs. They say he privately advised Trump of some things about we're running out of bullets and missiles and rockets. Might have to pull out the catapults. Maybe that's why Trump felt compelled to mention all those weapons. He's like thinking about all the weapons because And I don't know if we're running out of weapons or not. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. You don't have like a limitless supply, and you're supposed to keep enough weapons to do everything at all times, because that's what feeds the military-industrial complex, is that, you know, we've got to be able to fight the Chinese and the Russians and whoever it is in Europe, the Germans again, for crying out loud. I just heard they turned Hitler's house into a police station. The Germans could rise at any moment, cross the Rhine and threaten the Sudetenland. So we have to be ready for all this, because the military-industrial complex needs to be fed. And so we're supposed to have all these missiles, and now we have three, I call them pillars of the fifth column. You could call them three legs of the stool sample in the media, all leaking stories that we're running out of guns and bullets and rockets. And if this was a sane country and if this was a real war, Somebody would be kicking in doors at the New York Times, breaking windows at CBS News, and rifling through Teslas over at the CNN parking complex to find out who's leaking this stuff. But it's not a real war. We're not really a real country anymore. We're basically surviving on fumes. And so people are allowed to leak militarily critical information to outright communist insurgents and insurrectionists in the media, and nobody gets arrested or detained. They just get jokes made about them at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So, meanwhile, while the fake war goes on in Iran. And I don't want to imply that it's a fake war and that nobody's dying, because that's not true. The deaths are real. The bombings, the explosions, the people who've been blown to pieces, the soldiers who've been killed, that's all real. It's just the fakeness of the event itself in accomplishing the mission that I'm referring to. It's a fake war. And a fake war is often end badly because you really lose. That's the thing. But here we've got a real war that's been going on for really almost 10 years, but officially, as far as CNN is concerned, CBS and New York Times, the war, the Russo-Ukrainian war. Zero Hedge posted footage this past week that shows what appears to be a Russian Garand 4 jet-powered one-way attack drone striking a passenger train in Ukraine at over 300 miles an hour. I saw the video. It looks like a bullet came out of the sky and hit this train. It was pretty scary. And it wasn't a bullet. It was a drone. A jet engine-powered suicide drone. And anyway, they say that this is the path of drone evolution, is that this toward miniature turbojet engines that accelerate the speed and then accelerate the overall tempo of combat across modern battlefields, which is somewhat terrifying. The Russian jet suicide drone, I guess called a suicide jet. It was powered by a Chinese-made Telefly turbojet engine, and it forces Kiev to deploy and then upgrade, and then pretty soon we're launching jet-powered drones and then swarms of them at each other. Zero Hedge goes on to say, we warned you back in May, wait until microjet engines become standard on suicide drones. Oh boy, that's... So people wonder why I'm sometimes cynical and all of that. You read a headline like microjet engines, suicide drones. It's anyway. I just want to say that the fat, lazy, overfed, greedy politicians in Europe and in America who started this war and who have allowed this war to continue and who have stoked it really for their own personal financial benefit. And by the way, I'm convinced at this point, to facilitate research into how to better and more effectively and efficiently kill one another, which is one thing war is great for. It's great for research and development and advancement, especially in the area of killing one another. These bastards who've allowed this, who started this war and stoked it and have allowed it, that they are going to be judged quite harshly by history, quite harshly, that this has been allowed to happen. And I don't even want to be near them on Judgment Day.
Black masses, evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction, in the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning, death and hatred to mankind.
That's right. I had to let it roll through the roll-offs because now, except for the extremely self-indulgent long-form droning introduction that's part of the original and that one that we didn't play that. Other than that, that's a far greater intro than anything the Rolling Stones ever put together. Especially the roll-off. Come on. All right. But, and just the three giant power chords. Come on. Although that's what the Rolling Stones, pretty much every song was that. So I guess everybody was borrowing from the Stones, who got most of their information and inspiration from the devil himself. But let's go from there. Speaking of the devil, let's go to the Civil War file where we check in the United Kingdom with the murder of Anne Whitacombe. Anne Whitacombe was murdered in what British officials initially called a robbery gone bad. So if you're not familiar with Anne Whitacombe, it's only because she's in England, you're in America, she's a parliamentarian, she's not really that famous. She was relatively conservative, a professing Christian, and therefore everything she ever said was pretty much buried and never made it over here. So you may not have known who she was, but in Britain, she was the face of conservative politics, Christianity, pro-life, at least in the parliament, where she retired some decades ago. And she had recently got back into politics because she thought that it's like the end of the world, because it's like, how insane could this all get? She got back into politics just before COVID, and then she's been quite a staple of conservative politics since then. And she was 84 years old, if I'm not mistaken, 84 years old. She was quite old. And a 20-something-year-old neck-bearded communist broke into her house and beat her to death with a hammer. And the news initially said it's a robbery. What did they call it? A robbery that spiraled out of control is what they called it. And then now they're finally having to admit that, no, the guy was a left-wing political terrorist. He traveled several hundred miles and attacked her with just vicious. There was a picture of him. He looks like the typical standard neck-bearded, fat, overfed leftist, pale. And so they're calling it Europe's Charlie Kirk moment, that this is similar to the assassination of Charlie Kirk. It's an unappropriate comparison, I would say. Meanwhile, here in the United States, there's been the rise of the Democrat socialists ever since they scored the big wins in Colorado and then the big wins in New York. People are starting to say, what's going on? Are the naked communists like able to win elections now? Is that what's happening? What's going on? And the Democrats are feigning shock and distress, right? You've got guys like Carville, And who's the other communist bastard piece of garbage, leftist mouthpiece, piece of filth? The little midget on Real Time with Bill Maher, that guy. They're all, and then here we got Van Jones. They're all feigning shock and dismay, and that the what they call Democrat socialists are taking over their Democrat Party. Van Jones, and I just wanted to speak about this in light of the brutal, vicious murder of a conservative woman by a leftist soldier. A young man beats her to death with a hammer. He's a soldier. That's the act of a soldier. Meanwhile, Van Jones condemns what he calls socialists in the Democrat Socialist Movement, he calls them. And he condemns the fact that they're taking over his party. What he's not telling you is, number one, he will sign on with them as a paid consultant if they prove to him they can win enough elections. Because the fact is, Van Jones and Barack Obama built the Democrat Socialist Movement that is currently taking over the Democrat Party and the voting population of Generation, whatever they call themselves. Y, or they have another name. I can't remember what it is. I can't remember. But my daughters are a part of this generation. I can't remember the name of it because I'm a part of a generation where we forget about stuff at the age that we're reaching. What do they call themselves? They're not millennials. Millennials are the Gen Z. That's right. I apologize. The millennials are, they're not yet to the age where they forget about the fact that they're in a certain generation. And then the Gen Z, the younger kids, are being overtaken by the communists because of what Barack Obama and Van Jones very carefully built back in the early 2000s. I remember, folks, and I believe I've talked about this on the air. I tried to do a search of my own website to try to find if I'd quoted any news stories, but it doesn't seem like I did link to any news stories. But I know I've told this story about driving down Wadsworth Boulevard in the Denver suburbs in 2014, and I saw all those public school kids who had walked out of school with their teachers. And they were all holding their anti-fascism signs and calling the new Board of Education in the Jefferson County Schools fascists. And I remember it was a very eerie scene. They weren't quite blocking traffic, but they were being intimidating enough that you had to slow down. And I remember feeling intimidated. And I remember reaching down into the door pocket and making sure my gun was there because I thought this could turn violent. I felt that way. And these were like 14 and 15-year-old kids with 40-something lesbian teachers with the holding their no fascism signs. But that was, I knew it, I felt it right then. That was the early testing and deployment of Barack Obama and Van Jones soldiers. One of their soldiers shot Charlie Kirk. One of their soldiers just murdered Ann Widdecombe. And don't believe Van Jones when he pretends that it's bothering him. Because this is exactly what he meant to do. This was what he was paid to do. This is what he dreamed of doing in college, and he's done it. And they might just kill him. Van Jones could have his head smashed in with a hammer. So, but don't let that fool you that this wasn't his deal. It was his deal. Yeah, I have this story. I did link to this from October 2014 when the British newspaper, The Guardian, reported. In 2013, a conservative school board was elected in Jefferson County, and they wanted to return the history curriculum to promote citizenship, patriotism, and free enterprise. And so Barack Obama and the communists back then that I was warning you about, these are communists, these are fascists, these are insurgents, these are insurrectionists. I was talking about it back then. They called that fascism, and they got all the kids to walk out of school there in Colorado, which in my opinion, Colorado is far more leftist and vicious and dangerous than California or New York or even Minnesota. There's something about Colorado, there's certain viciousness to it. I'm just telling you. that if the bloody rebellion of the communists is to be birthed, it won't be in Minnesota, it won't be in New York, it won't be in San Francisco, it'll be in Colorado. There's just a certain something about, a certain edge to it that I saw, because I think the people there are particularly gullible and easily led and stupid. There's something about Colorado that has attracted a lot of really dumb people. And now they're in charge, and they've had generation after generation of communist and perverted indoctrination in the public schools. And so I'm just saying, if when the violent thing blows, it'll probably happen in Colorado. And I saw it, I felt it, and there's the story on the fascists in the state of Colorado. Meanwhile, can I even do this story? A story that would have shocked the nation 40 years ago. I've been saying this now for 25 years, 30 years almost. So I have to add a decade every time, because it's getting further and further back that this would have shocked the nation. This would have shocked America in the 1980s, maybe even in the 1990s, but that's about it. A house burned down in the suburbs of, I believe this is in Michigan, in the suburbs of Detroit. I'm not sure exactly. But the house burned down, and there were early reports that some of the people inside had what the news media calls suffered gunshot wounds, right? If that's a thing you do, you suffer those? Okay. I suffer a runny nose or a stubbed toe, but gunshot wounds, anyway, but that's the way they report it in the news. Kind of take the edge off the whole gunshot wound thing. But it turns out Mandy Karalkowitz, 39, her husband Christopher, 47, and their six children, all from 5 to 15 years old, found dead in their home. Some of them had been shot. It looks like a murder-suicide. Obviously, the initial suspect would be the father. But we don't really know. But one thing we do know from this report, from the Daily Mail, is that their house was valued at $750,000. They say that all the dead were found in their $750,000 home. Why would they mention that? Why does the Daily Mail mention the fact that they had a $750,000 house? It's just that they can't help promoting covetousness and envy and hatred. And they're not even doing it on purpose anymore. They think that's an interesting fact. Oh, they had a really nice house. And maybe that's an angle they want to promote, that, you know, you think this wouldn't happen in a rich, good-looking, white, successful family. Everybody was so pretty and their teeth were perfect. But anyway, just the fact that they point this out and they point things like that out is their inadvertent promotion of hatred, envy, covetousness, and eventually bloody violence. And they don't know that they're doing it, because they've been deceived by the errors of their parents and the devil and all of that stuff that the Bible's been warning us about for 5,000 years. So this doesn't shock the nation, number one. It doesn't even make the news. This is probably the first time you've heard about it. That a family is, at the very least, somebody killed these people and burned their house down on them. Chances are someone from within the own family, within the same family, which is horrifying, shocking. Anyway, the mother was a part-time teacher. I'm sorry, what do they call them? A substitute teacher at Grand Haven Area Public Schools. And so Grand Haven Area Public Schools shared a statement under the imprimatur of Superintendent Kristen Perkowski. Here's what the schools posted. It is with deep sadness that we acknowledge reports of a devastating incident in Grand Haven Township earlier today involving the loss of multiple lives, including several school-aged children. Regardless of the details that may emerge, this is a devastating incident and a tragic loss for our community. Our hearts are with all those impacted, and we know many throughout our community may be grieving and struggling to process this news. So a completely secular response to one of the few things on the planet that could possibly point people to God and Jesus Christ and their own sin and the fallen nature of the universe and right and wrong and truth. When something this shockingly, horribly, horrible happens, it's the one chance for God to get the attention of a populace that's typically distracted by their own immediate appetites and lusts and the pebble in their shoe and what they want to stuff in their eyes and their ears and their mouth. But the society, the people in the ranks of society that would sound the alarm that might call people's attention back to God, they've been programmed to do the opposite. Instead of mourning and weeping in sackcloth and ashes before God and begging for his help and his mercy in this horribly traumatic time, The school district, the superintendent, Kristen, she acknowledges a devastating incident involving the loss of multiple lives. Involving the loss of? Okay. That kind of takes the edge off, Chris. Regardless of the details, Chris says, it's a devastating incident. Regardless of the details, why would you say that? The details already are horrifically horrible, horrifying, horrific, awful. But the school is programmed to insulate people from the devastation of the event by using language that's almost like a sleeping pill or a Prozac. And then they can't talk about God or prayer or mercy or grace or sin or anything like that. Instead, they say, our hearts are with you, all of you, our hearts. Well, your heart? What is your heart worth? How can your heart help me? How can your heart help me deal with the horror of thinking of a guy murdering his wife and his six kids? How can your heart help? Your heart can't. You're not qualified. You need to point me to God. You should know that. But they don't know that because they're godless. And they ask us all to process this news. You know what that implies? That implies that we're all equipped and should be expected to be able to process this. How is that? Because the people at the school, they can process it quite easily because they're a bunch of godless heathens, brainwashed and disabled by decades and decades of communist, perverted, horrific godlessness. And this story should shock and stop the nation. It did shock and stop me. It made me think about God and the fall and sin and your need to have your sin forgiven because something horrible like this could explode right in your face at any moment, any one of us. And we all need at that point not to focus on helping others process and telling them about our hearts. We need to point them to God. Now, that was an all-drum intro right there. And I'm surprised that the Rolling Stones don't have a famous all-drums intro because the only guy in the band with any real talent was the drummer. And did he die early? No, nobody's died in that band. Nobody's died. That's amazing. The Rolling Stones drummer is the only talented musician in the whole band, and probably the bass player, too. But Keith Richards and the other guy with the lips and the fish face, I never did understand it. His vocals were always subpar. Keith Richards always seemed incredibly wasted and could barely pull off anything. But anyway, but the drummer had some fairly impressive licks, I will. But let's move on because I just talked about, I don't want to point people toward the Rolling Stones after just pointing you to God in this, in light of this. Man. I mean, who can even? So yeah, you almost have to withdraw yourself into something silly and entertaining to avoid screaming into the darkness when you read a story like that. Because you just want to stand up on the dome of every capital in every state and call people to repentance toward God when you hear about a story like that. And so we've done that. And we do want your attention. God wants your attention. That's the whole reason death had to come, you know. It wasn't like God did that out of, he was just mad and wanted to punish us. That's not why death came. It was absolutely necessary. There was no alternative. He had to do it that way. Otherwise, he'd never get our attention. We go la, 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 stuffing things into our ears and our eyes and our mouth, and we die in our sins, and we'd be lost to condemnation forever. Not because he wanted to punish us for just wanting to have fun. That's not it. He initially made us so that we would just have fun and be in the garden and do fun stuff and cool stuff all the time. It's not that he invented all this to punish us out of just being mean and angry about it. There's just no alternative. And he's trying to save as many of us out of it as he can. But he's not a magician. And he can by no means acquit the guilty. Anyway, I'll have more on that in my Bible study this coming week when we're going to talk about the unforgivable sin. See, I need to promote myself more. I started posting the Bible study on Facebook, starting to get a few comments. I don't know why I didn't do that before. I think I really don't know. Because I'm not big on self-promotion. But anyway, speaking of self-promotion, let's go to Alex Jones, who, even though he's been bankrupted by an alleged billion-dollar whatever it was, he's still doing his thing. He's selling his pills and he's ginning up the... He has a headline. Now, the headline wasn't associated with Alex Jones, so I clicked it because it said, "Bombshell documents that prove Dominion has been rigging elections." And so I clicked on it because I know intuitively that that's true. I know intuitively that Dominion and the other one, they're fake, phony, lying, fake. They're the fourth leg of the stool sample in the fifth column. However I put that earlier, it was quite genius. What did I call them? The three pillars of the fifth column? Well, Dominion and the other one, they're the fourth and fifth column of the fifth column. So I intuitively know that they're stealing elections and rigging elections, primarily via these voting machines and the drop boxes and the early voting and the late voting and all the fake phony shenanigans that go on around voting, for which someone should be held accountable, put on trial, and executed. That's how serious it is. I apologize for even using the word shenanigans. It's not shenanigans. It's criminal. At the highest level, it's capital crime, what they've been doing. And I know it's true intuitively, so I click on the story and then I find out, oh no, it's an Alex Jones interview. And here's the thing about Alex Jones. The story he's reporting on and the guy he's interviewing, Patrick Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E, not to be confused with anyone in the Talking Heads. He's probably giving good, true information. That could be enlightening to me as to how it is they're actually pulling off the rigging and the faking and the lying and the cheating in the elections with the Dominion voting machines. But I can't read the story and I can't watch the interview because it's Alex Jones. That's Alex Jones damaged his credibility with me so badly so long ago that I can't really trust him for anything. So I'm going to have to look up this guy, Patrick Byrne. And by the way, the fact that everyone who questioned the 2020 election has been dubbed a crazy conspiratorial nutcase who needs to be immediately dismissed, that right there should alert you to the fact that they're not that way. And the fact that most of them are associated with a guy like Alex Jones, that should not dissuade you from understanding that. Remember what we saw with the taping up of the windows and the votes changing at midnight? Does anyone remember that? I lived it in real time. I remember I saw it happen. I know it happened. And so just because Alex Jones knows it happened too does not mean I'm not right. But I have to look this up. I can't report on the story because it's Alex Jones, and I didn't get a chance to double, triple check it because I know Alex Jones. He's one of those huckster salesmen. He decided a long time ago he was more interested in getting rich than doing right. And he did get fairly wealthy. And now they've taken everything away from him, but he's got an infrastructure that will make him relatively wealthy within a year or two. He'll be fine. But then he's probably on his way straight to hell with jet rockets. Probably. I think he claims to be a Christian, but I've discovered over the past year, really, it's really been driven home to me, that most of the people who claim Jesus Christ with their mouth, they cannot articulate their own salvation, meaning that they're probably not going to heaven. Well, I mean, maybe, right? But what would you rather do, assume they're not or assume they are? I'm going to assume they're not. I'm going to assume most Christians are not. And that's, I know that's highly offensive and you probably think I'm mean, but here's the thing. If you were a plumber and I went to hire you to do a plumbing job, I would expect you to be able to articulate the fundamentals of plumbing. Otherwise, I would not hire you. And if you couldn't articulate plumbing, I would assume you're not a plumber. Would that be wrong for me to assume that? So if you claim you're a Christian, you say how much you love Jesus and you put him in your heart. You've invited him into your heart. You've accepted him. Well, I'm just going to assume that what you've done is you've invited him and accepted him into a little portion of your life that satisfies your immediate appetites and lusts for whatever he can help you out with. And that you're really just a superstitious, religious person on your way straight to hell with jet rockets. That's what I'm going to say. Even though you name the name of Christ, unless you can articulate the gospel, I apologize. No, I don't apologize. I assume you're going to hell. All right, now, speaking of people on their way straight to hell with jet rockets, let's close with this. This is a story from, who is this from? Oh, this is a New York Post, which I shouldn't even mention their name. I'll never link to them. New York Post is perverted, pornographic garbage. You should never look at any stories on it. And this is a, this is, the story is exactly what I just said, but the New York Post specializes in publishing stories that are so shocking and disgusting in their details that they make people who are just your average run-of-the-mill sinner on their way to hell, make them feel better about themselves. That's the devil's specialty. He wants to keep throwing out there and feeding you shocking, gross, horrifying, detailed stories that are so shocking and gross that you'll kind of feel better about the fact that you're imperfect, that you make mistakes, there's some things you don't know, sometimes you misjudge things, sometimes you do things only in your own interest without considering the interest of other people. And for that, you're going to hell. For that. Just making decisions without considering the good of others and the good of God, just that, you go to hell for that. But at least I'm not introducing transgender dolls into the public schools like these horrible, awful perverts from the Minnesota Medical School. And this is a shocking story. This is reason number 2,162. To get or keep your children out of the government schools is because they'll have them playing with transgender dolls. As if you needed that as a reason. Yeah, it's right. The New York Post says these tranny dolls are in the schools and taxpayers are footing the bill. As if that's an issue. The tax issue is immaterial. This is a criminal act. This is not an issue of how tax money is being spent. This is a question of a bunch of perverted criminals in the schools in front of kids. But the New York Post, it's just political grist to them. It's clicks. So they talk about the tax angle anyway. And then, of course, they make the obligatory organ plug against that Democrat leftist Minnesota governor, Tim Walz, under whom this is all occurring. And yeah, right. As if Minnesota only became a communist cesspool of perverts in the public schools since Tim Walz came along. They've been that way for 100 years in Minnesota, you morons at the Post. And you just been winking and and chuckling at it the whole time and making a real good living writing stories, making fun of it while they've been destroying the country and destroying kids and families and sending people straight to hell with jet rockets. But here's what's going on at the Minnesota Medical School's Institute for Sexual and Gender Health Research. So that right there, somebody should kick the doors in there and padlock that thing, start making arrests that they even have one of those. Well, they introduced these dolls as research dolls. That the dolls with the interchangeable genitalia were later spun into a commercial venture. Because in Minnesota, these things will sell, maybe, like in the private industry. We could have them at the retail. They could be on the shelves at Walmart. We could all be millionaires. No! This isn't a commercial venture that launched out of a school like happens in the medical world. This is an organized crime operation. This type of spinoff would never survive the private market. MyGenderDolls.com. Yeah, right. People are going to line up to buy those. Started by two licensed psychologists who are professors at the medical school. Oh, my gosh. How can you have a professor of psychology? Anyway, they got them. The medical school, by the way, the poster boy, they've been receiving $15 million a year from Waltz, that communist, bad Democrat governor. They've been doing that for 100 years. Anyway, all right. The psychologist who specializes in children and teen transgender health should be arrested for even having that on the resume. Goes by they, them pronouns. This is the founder of My Gender Dolls. Therapists at the university, who are apparently the only people who buy these dolls, they use the dolls to get kids talking about, I can't even say that. I can't even say what they do. So these people shouldn't just be arrested. They need to be hit in the head with a club and then arrested. They need to be stopped in their tracks, frankly, and then arrested, put on trial. And they should get a fair trial. And if convicted, they should be duly executed quickly and painfully to stem this type of behavior in the future and to point other people to God in the face of horrific events like this occurring. And we're just here to keep you informed about all that. Here at the Weekly Worldview, we'll be back next time. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.